AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Hello and welcome to Are You Well? I'm your host, Vijay Murthy. I'm a London-based functional medicine practitioner, Ayurvedic doctor, a naturopath and a public health researcher. I am sharing this knowledge of Are You Well with you based on integrating the ancient medical and health wisdom of Ayurveda, which originated in India 5,000 years ago, and its concepts and methods are still very relevant today. The reason why I'd like to integrate Ayurveda with our current day approaches towards health, particularly individualized health or personalized health, is we in our training have been so focused, and also in our practice of healthcare, on diseases and illness, that we rarely look at health independent of illness or disease. For instance, within my practice, a majority of my patients, they come to me because they have been suffering from some illness, or they have been diagnosed with a condition and they want to get well and they want to also at the same time become healthy. There is nothing wrong in focusing on our health when we have an illness. It can be a great motivator, or it becomes a necessity in many cases. But how about if we start to understand what we can do on an everyday basis to be healthy? Can we do something alongside, you know, our focus on nutrition and exercise and even mindfulness for that matter, and how to integrate all of these into our everyday life so that we can ensure that we are contributing towards being healthy and also being well? A distinction that always has interested me is the difference between health and well-being. We often believe that if we don't have a disease condition, or especially I hear that when some of my patients, they say, I really have a great news to share with you, that I have been discharged from being a patient. Let's, for instance, say somebody who has been diagnosed with certain type of cancer a few years ago. They go through oncological treatments, they recover well, and then they are followed up for 5 years, in some cases 10 years, And then the hospital says, you're now discharged. And they say, yeah, I've been discharged. And this is something that is worthy of celebration. Yes, absolutely, it is worthy of celebration. But often, when we think about health as absence of disease, not needing to take any more medications, we are slightly moving away from the true concept of health. The distinction between health and wellness is that, or well-being to be more precise, is that I can be physically healthy and not feel well. How many times have you not noticed that you might not have a disease condition? You might be physically quite okay, but still you don't feel well. And have you not come across individuals who are unhealthy? They have a disease condition. They're going through an intense treatment, and yet they're full of life. They have this sense of well-being in them. So even in public health research, we kind of look at, okay, there is a very thin line between health and well-being. You can be healthy and unwell. You can be ill and still be well. So our effort on an everyday basis has to be to integrate both health and well-being. And do we have such models which can actually teach us these concepts and how to apply that into our everyday life? I do think Ayurveda, the ancient Indian healing system, which has not only been practiced for thousands of years, but also has been well documented through the medical textbooks of Ayurveda, which date back even to 1st century BC, like Charaka Samhita, which is dated between 1st century BC and 2nd century AD, which talks about concepts of health, concepts of how to live on an everyday basis, how to adapt ourselves by changing our nutrition and lifestyle with change in seasons, how to predict the onset of an illness, how to improve our strength or immunity, how to be mentally resilient when we are faced with the challenges of anxiety or sadness or depression or stress for that matter. And I'm going to be in this show and the future shows introducing to you concepts of Ayurveda which are highly relevant for our modern day living. Let us start with a very common concept in Ayurveda, which is about gut health. In fact, the classics of Ayurveda, the ancient medical textbooks, they in Sanskrit define that all diseases start due to dysfunction of gut. This is a very old Sanskrit quotation, which makes total sense if we understand how our gut forms the basis for determining immunity, as gut is the first line of defense. If we really look at facts about gut, we harbor millions and millions of cells of bacteria or gut microbiome. And gut microbiota, it weighs up to 1 to 2 kgs. So we literally are carrying about 1 or 2 kgs of gut microbiota, which is not our own species, but a completely different species, which helps us to develop immunity, but when it is not functioning all right, can also become the breeding ground for various illnesses. And these bacteria, they are 10 to 50 times smaller than human cells. And if you are going to imagine the surface area, if we spread this gut microbiota or microbes onto a surface, it would be 400 meters square, which is exactly equivalent to two tennis courts. And 90% of our own bacteria is located in the gastrointestinal tract, our digestive system. And if the gut microbiome that we harbor are laid end to end, our body's bacteria would circle the earth 2.5 times. And in our body, microbes outnumber the human cells by 10 to 1. So that's how important gut microbiome is. And in Ayurveda, there is an emphasis on an everyday basis to do something in terms of your routine to help your gut microbiome, because our gut microbiome helps in improving our immunity, providing a physical barrier to invasive microbes, and our gut flora, it enhances the functionality of the immune system. It also helps in better absorption and conversion and utilization of vitamins. Like bacteria in the gut, they play a very direct role in the synthesis of vitamin B and K, as well as absorption of calcium and iron. Metabolism, as we all know, once we become adults and as we get older, our metabolic rate starts to come down. We start to notice that we will accumulate adipose tissue or adiposity in places that you did not have before, and can also predispose us to metabolic conditions like high blood pressure or diabetes. In fact, metabolic activity of the gut flora allows our body to utilize food that would otherwise not be digested. Many times we could be eating the right food, but we may not be shedding weight if we carry excess weight, maybe because we are not absorbing these foods properly. And we also know that, you know, the current pandemic, I'm not talking about COVID, but, you know, the chronic disease pandemic, obesity, like, is largely linked to the differences between gut microbiome amongst individuals. Even if two individuals are eating the same food, having similar activity, depending on their gut microbiome, they might be utilizing energy differently, and as such, some may actually be obese, not because they are eating badly or they're not being physically active. They may have some gut microbial issues. And many of us will have heard of this term, inflammation. For instance, you know, when your doctors ask you to get certain blood tests and they look for certain inflammatory markers, you know, is your secretory IgA, if it is elevated, then your doctor might say there is a low-grade inflammation in your system. Or if C-reactive protein, if that's elevated, one would suspect, oh, possibly there's going to be an inflammatory chronic disease that is setting in your system. And inflammation is very largely related to gut microbiome. Gut flora, it's very likely to play a very major role in the development of various inflammatory diseases. And sometimes it can be inflammatory bowel diseases and even inflammation of the gut, which results in malabsorption. And it could be irritable bowel syndrome, it can be colitis, and many other digestive-related conditions could be related to gut microbiome. And, you know, it's not a surprise that now researchers have been looking at how our gut microbiome can also determine our ability to remember things, our memory. In children, how it can be related to their attention, their concentration, or even behavior. It's found that, you know, by Changing one's gut microbiome, particularly amongst children and also even adults, that autism can be managed better or managed differently. So when we look at these, it makes total sense that we should really be paying utmost attention to our gut. Well, then we understand these concepts, then what can we do to ensure that our gut microbiome is functioning well? I would say if we can really look at the Ayurvedic principles, I've distilled these Ayurvedic principles into 12 key dietary principles to boost our host resilience. And number one is reduce sugar intake, as sugar hacks your immune system. And when I say sugar intake, I also mean anything that can easily get converted into sugars. For instance, if I'm choosing a refined carbohydrate like wheat or rice, polished rice, as opposed to a multigrain or a whole grain, or something which is a more complex carbohydrate like legumes or beans, although they both contain sugars or carbohydrates in them, the sugars in whole grains, the sugars in legumes and beans, they are not readily released and it takes time. Therefore, there is a slow elevation of sugars as we are digesting them, which is far better than a sudden sugar rush, which happens by eating refined carbohydrates or refined foods, processed foods. And if we make it a habit on a daily basis to choose complex carbohydrates versus simple carbohydrates, already we are helping improve our gut health, our gut microbiome. And one simple tip I can give you is try not to have liquid calories. For instance, you know, having juices unnecessarily can immediately trigger that sugar surge or sugar rush, which over a period of time can result in insulin resistance. So number one is reduce sugar intake, because once we have sugars, then our immune system becomes suppressed for several hours. And imagine if we have sugar and our immune system is suppressed for about 4 hours, then if you have like about 6 times of sugar, then our immune system is suppressed for the entire day. So every decision that you take when it comes to eating can either influence your immune system positively or may reduce the chances of your immune system from acting effectively.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Number two is how you start your day. And I would suggest that if you can start your day by having ginger and cumin tea, that is a good way to help your digestive system. Why ginger? Ginger has a gastric emptying property. It helps in opening up the various valves which help in food transiting through our gut effectively or efficiently. And that's why, you know, ginger is also used in motion sickness. Ginger is used when someone feels nauseous because it actually helps in pushing the secretions further down instead of bringing them back up. So when you wake up in the morning, if you can take about 1 inch by 1 inch, if that's too much, take a little bit less of it. And this ginger, freshly sliced ginger, I prefer to grate it. You just grate it or you crush it and you pour about a glass of hot water onto it. And then I also would add some crushed cumin seeds. Now, cumin, you may not be very familiar with it. If you're not familiar, look up. It's quite a common spice. It's an Indian spice. It's also used in many other cultures. And you just can take about half a teaspoon or 1 teaspoon of cumin and you crush it. You put it in along with ginger, add hot water and you drink. Because cumin and ginger, they can help in protecting the gut. It helps in protecting the mucosa or the lining of your gut. The way I'd like to kind of say is, you know, like after shower, most of us, we try and apply some moisturizer to keep our skin moistened. In a very similar way, if you want to moisten, if you want to really kind of have the same protective benefit inside for your gut, then your moisturizer would be cumin and ginger tea. So this helps in improving our gut function. Number three, so balanced meals at regular times every day. It's very important that, you know, we establish a certain routine of having our meals at a specific time every day. But we also must think that we shouldn't be eating if we are not hungry. Not to force feed ourselves, unless you are a child who is growing, unless you are somebody who is so physically active that you have greater requirement for calories, or you are somebody who is going through treatments, you're on medication, that you are on anti-diabetic medication where you need to eat. Except for these conditions, it is good always to check in and think, am I feeling hungry? Do I feel light in my body? Do I have an appetite? Do I not feel like eating? And then to eat. But then, how do we train our body to know that it has to produce these secretions? It has to create these enzymes that are important for digestion, is by starting to plan our meal times. Of course, you know, when we are working, or when we are employed, when we are at an office or at an organization where there are specific times, we don't have any other choice than eating during our lunch break or during our meal break. However, these days, we do have the option of planning our meal times, and we may fail to eat at a specific time because we get carried away or we don't necessarily plan for it. Much like, you know, we have to train our bodies to do certain things. For instance, you know, having a good sleeping and waking time, having proper kind of routine, like when you get up in the morning, to go to the loo, to sit on the toilet and to wait for the body to kickstart that peristalsis to have a clear bowel movement. Everything is like we are training our body clock. In order to train our body clock, it's always good to have some specific meal times. And in my opinion, I would say if you are an adult, especially if you are above, let's say, 30 years or 25 years, and not really, you know, 60 or 65, between these ages from 25, let's say up to 65 or even 70, it is better to have two or three proper meals rather than eating or grazing throughout the day. That will also help in better gut function. So number three Ayurvedic principle is balanced meals at regular times every day. And number four is include leafy greens. Why include leafy greens? Okay, leafy greens, they are very rich in fiber. And we know that, you know, fiber is a very important aspect of our everyday dietary requirement. For instance, you know, we think of carbohydrates, we think of proteins, we think of fats, but then we often forget that the other most important aspect of everyday intake has to be fiber. Why? Some of this fiber is soluble, some of the fiber is insoluble. Insoluble fiber is what helps in better formation of stools, and also it is the soluble fiber and insoluble fiber upon which the bacteria in our gut starts to act and then starts to populate the gut microbiome. So if you have a healthy gut microbiome or want a healthy gut microbiome, it's very important to have fiber. In fact, many researchers say that as adults, we need about 35 grams of fiber every day. And believe me, I really love vegetables, non-root vegetables. And then I try to pack in as much as broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, spinach, kale, and also I use like sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, nuts in my diet, and yet it is not easy to come up to 35 grams of fiber. So if you don't pay attention to the amount of fiber you're eating, you're depleting your gut from being populated with good microbiome. So it's important. Number four is to include green leafy vegetables. Also be careful when you are using green leafy vegetables, because some of us might be sensitive to oxalates, or you know, you might have heard of individuals who say, I have a family history of kidney stones, particularly oxalate type of kidney stones, so they are advised not to have too much of certain foods like spinach or green leafy vegetables, which are high in oxalates. But there's a way to get around it, which is the way how you cook your green leafy vegetables. What you really want to do is to add water to your spinach and to cook it, and then to discard the water after you have cooked it, so that the oxalates, most of it, are released into your boiled water or cooked water and you're not ingesting. Oxalates, you know, these are natural compounds or chemicals which are present in the plant, because the plant also has to protect itself. And when the plant has these toxic substances which are natural, then it's less likely to be infected and invaded by other organisms. So it's nature's way of protecting itself. But then while spinach and all foods for that matter, they have nutrients which are beneficial to us, they also have anti-nutrients which can harm us. Therefore, the way we soak, the way we prepare food, the way we cook food, all has an impact on our gut microbiome and our immune system. So number five is include fresh fruits. When I say include fresh fruits, I mainly stick to apples, oranges, and berries. Apples and oranges particularly have quercetin and vitamin C, and these are very beneficial for improving one's immune system. How much is the question? I would say try not to have juice, because when you have juice, you're not getting the fiber. There is a place for just having juice, but in most individuals, it would be better to have a fruit by eating them with the fiber content, so the release of sugar becomes a bit low, or slow rather, not low, and this can be helpful. And I would say an apple a day, or if you are active, you possibly can have more of the fruits. But in general, I prefer berries, because berries are high in antioxidants, and fruits can be high in sugars. But it's much better than eating something which is like a processed carbohydrate, because fruits also give us many other phytoconstituents which help in improving our gut's health. Number 6, include fermented foods. Okay, fermented foods has been a tradition in human history for centuries. Also because when there were no refrigerators, you couldn't store things, and you didn't want to waste it. And why waste something which is so nutritious? And therefore, milk was turned into curds or yogurt. And then that was made into buttermilk. And then that would be fermented, which has live bacteria like Acidophilus. And that became part of our everyday nutrition. And, you know, like if you look at kimchi, you know, which is the Asian spicy fermented food, or it can be sauerkraut, which is fermented cabbage, and buttermilk, which is a fermented liquid again, or kefir. But be sure that you source a good source of fermented food, not something that's too commercial, that has added sugars or too many sugars. Then again, you are not helping yourself, although you're getting the probiotic benefit if you're putting something which has additives and sugars in them. So it's better to go for fermented foods which you prepare at home. It's not difficult. You can prepare sauerkraut at home. You can make buttermilk at home. You know, the easiest way to make buttermilk is to take one part of plain set yogurt. To that, you add about 4 parts of water. You blend it, and then whatever the solids or frothy bits that float on top, you can scoop it off, and then you get this clear whey, which is not only good in probiotics, but also is good in proteins. So having a fermented food, and I would say if you can't have fermented food because you can't make it, or for some reason you don't want to have it, then getting into the practice of having apple cider vinegar. Apple cider vinegar with mother, in the sense, you know, where the culture is still there, if you can add it to your morning drink. You know, I said that have cumin, ginger, water, and you could either add it to it, or you can have it separately. You can just have a little shot of apple cider vinegar in the morning, and it kickstarts a good gut health improving function. So, yes, the importance of fermented foods. And number 7 is include spices. Spices, because spices, they act as prebiotic, in the sense, you know, prebiotics are the ones which helps the gut microbiome to be produced, because this gut microbiome, they act on this prebiotics and then become converted. So prebiotics are very important, and fiber and spices, practically they are very few calories, but then literally they are, they have bundles and bundles of antioxidant richness in them. So spices, include spices. I'm going to be sharing with you the kinds of spices that I like, I'd like to add in my everyday food preparation shortly. Number eight is, it is important to rotate your foods. So why rotate your food is, one, to get variety. When we get used to eating the same breakfast, same lunch, and same dinner, then we are exposing ourselves not only to the same kinds of nutrients, but also possibly the same kind of risk factors. Sometimes, you know, our body might develop a late onset allergy, which is called IgG, food intolerance, where if our gut microbiome is not functioning well, and we are giving our body the same kinds of food day in and day out, then because of the dose dependency or excess dosage of certain foods which can act as irritants, we may have an immune response where it might result in inflammation. The other reason to have variety of foods is that you then don't have much cravings. So try and alter the kinds of vegetables you add. Even if you are having the habit of taking a smoothie, it is better to alter the vegetables. If you prepare smoothie today with spinach, then tomorrow do it with kale. If you are having green mung beans to prepare your lunch today, maybe tomorrow try some other kind of beans or legumes or lentils. Even change your grains, change your vegetables. And something I always think is that when we think of vegetables, think of non-root vegetables. Of course, you know, root vegetables such as potato, which is with its skin, when it is baked, does give the benefit of fiber and also carbohydrates. However, the more fibrous green leafy vegetables is what I would say. And you can look at different colors. You know, you can look at, go to a supermarket instead of looking at, oh, what can I buy? Look into your basket and see how many colors of vegetables do I have. The more colors you have, the more variety you get. The more variety you get, you're feeding your gut a very diverse phytonutrient-rich food, which can become the foundation for good gut microbial health.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Then number nine is, try and avoid processed foods. Yes, as I said earlier, processed foods, they have additives, they are complex. Our body is not quite used to, evolution-wise, to eat these highly manipulated foods that have too many different artificial ingredients in them. And always we know that those who choose processed foods versus whole foods, even if they are eating the same calories, the inflammatory markers in someone who eats processed food will be far higher. There's been research which shows that one could have 500 kilocalories of processed food, like, let's say, a burger, to another person who would have 500 kilocalories of whole foods, like let's say cooked whole grains with vegetables, or even good quality meat. The one who eats whole foods or wholesome foods, their inflammatory markers will be far better than somebody who has eaten an equivalent caloric amount of processed food. And our overall health, especially our long-term health, is dependent on how we eat on a daily basis. And even if we are eating the right amount of calories, if we are giving our body more processed foods, which are very chemically complex but not nutrient dense, then that can result in creating risk factors for chronic diseases. Number 10, reduce alcohol intake. Alcohol, we know that through research, is a very tricky substance. It is really good if one has it with meal in moderation, much like Mediterranean diet. But it certainly is not good if it is drunk on its own, and especially to cope with stress. From an Ayurvedic perspective, Ayurveda does not ban alcohol. What Ayurveda or Ayurvedic classical textbooks say is, if one drinks alcohol for coping with stress, then that depletes that person's ojas or immunity. Ojas is a word in Sanskrit which is used to indicate the essence of one's nutrition. Like everything that we eat ultimately distills and is converted into an essence called ojas, O-J-U-S. And this is what determines our longevity and long-term health. And if one drinks alcohol to cope with stress, or when they are sad, when they are depressed, then ojas becomes depleted. And when one drinks alcohol, of course in moderation, when they are happy for celebration, then the ojas or immunity becomes better. So it's not so much alcohol itself, although in excess, whether you're happy or sad, if you drink more alcohol, it has adverse health effects. But in moderation, also, if it is drunk when one is happy, it can help our immunity. If one drinks to cope with stress, then it can affect the immune system badly. And also, let's also face the fact that, you know, alcohol can be empty calories. Like it has 7 kilocalories, per gram of alcohol, which is empty calorie. Like fat has about 1 gram of fat has 9 kilocalories, and carbohydrates and proteins, for 1 gram of carbohydrate and protein, there are 4 kilocalories. So you can imagine that alcohol, every gram of alcohol, I mean, of course, we don't measure it in gram when we are drinking, we are getting that much of more empty calories, and also it can increase sugar levels. But alcohol has a place if you have it with meal, because it also has, particularly wine, has this resveratrol. Of course, one can argue that you would need to drink a lot of wine to get the right amount of resveratrol, which is a powerful antioxidant. Why not just take resveratrol instead of drinking alcohol? But it is really about not avoiding a food or having some food too much, but it's understanding the consequences, the implication of these foods, and the context within which how it acts on our gut, on our immune system. Then we have rule or guideline number 11, which is drinking warm water. So, drinking warm water. Why drink warm water? Because, you know, in many traditions, we see that, you know, having ice with water is such a common practice because it feels like you are able to quench your thirst better when you have ice cold water, or it feels refreshing from an Ayurvedic perspective. However, it is seen as something which depletes your digestive ability. So in Ayurveda, you're always encouraged to have warm water. Sometimes even you're encouraged to sip hot water. And I know through my experience that when I choose to drink warm water, it gives a little bit of a sensation of warmth and a sense of ease in the body. And also, you don't need to be drinking too much of fluids when you keep sipping warm water, even during summers. Of course, I would suggest that as adults, we will need about 2 liters of water a day, sometimes even 2.5 liters, depending on your individual needs. But at least, even if all of that is not warm water, get into the practice of drinking some warm water. Also, by drinking warm water, you can prepare your gut to be a little bit more ready and relaxed to receive food and to digest it. Then rule number 12 is make pre-sleep hygiene a priority. Why practice pre-sleep hygiene? Especially because we are exposed to artificial light, gadgets, electromagnetic radiation, the tools that we today use, like the phones and the tablets, and even, you know, what we wear, which can emit, you know, electromagnetic waves, computers, they can interfere with the production of melatonin, which is so much necessary to induce and also maintain good sleep. And as we know, those who do not have restful sleep, whose sleep is disturbed, will eventually will have a hormonal disturbance. And this hormonal disturbance can result in inflammation. It can also affect gut health. In fact, it can increase stress. And we know through research that those who are constantly stressed, either because of stress or poor sleep, then their gut microbiome is down-regulated. So certain gut microbiome are seen to be thinner or less populated, like Acidophilus, which is very important for a good gut function. So therefore, practicing pre-sleep hygiene, basically, you know, getting into a comfortable clothing, turning off your computer, electronic gadgets, dimming the light. So we are kind of aligning ourselves with how we evolved, that we were active during the day and we rest during the night when there is no daylight, and to align our body clock with the universe's clock becomes very important. So the way we start the day, the way we end the day can become the two important aspects of how it determines our gut health and therefore our immunity as well. So let's look at, you know, the spices which I think we could store in our kitchen and start using on a daily basis to improve our gut health. Cumin, as I said, you know, to make a cumin drink in the morning or to use it with your food. Because cumin, it reduces oxidative stress. Because of our lifestyle, because of our work, because of age, because of our illness, constantly our body is undergoing oxidative stress. in order to reduce this oxidative stress, an antioxidant like cumin can be quite helpful when it is used as a food. Ginger. Again, you know, I mentioned to have ginger and cumin as a drink in the morning. And ginger is particularly helpful in better gastric emptying. And it's also helpful in reducing any acid reflux. And ginger is known really to support the respiratory system, to reduce the tendency for respiratory infections or to improve recovery from respiratory infections. And ginger is a very well-known anti-inflammatory, because most of the chronic health conditions, they start because of a low-grade inflammation. To have ginger on an everyday basis can be beneficial. Coriander. Particularly, I would encourage you to have coriander seeds as well as coriander leaves. Coriander seeds, they are anti-inflammatory. And coriander seeds also, they can increase the gastric secretion but without causing acidity. So they help in better enzymatic activity, help in better digestion of food, but they don't actually cause any excess acidity. So coriander can be a good spice to have in your kitchen and to use it on an everyday basis. And if you're not familiar with a spice called hing, hing is a Hindi word, and the English word for it is asafoetida. Asafoetida, it is a resin from the root of the hing plant or asafoetida plant. And this resin, it does not smell great, but when you use a small pinch of it in hot oil or hot ghee or in any kind of fat which is heated up, then it unfolds its aroma and it has antiviral properties. Not only that, it also helps in reducing any bloating or flatulence. It's really good for improving gut function. I also would suggest it would be good to use garlic, and because garlic reduces the intensity of infections, it helps as a very broad spectrum antimicrobial. If there's any issue of, let's say, excess fungal activity or bacterial overgrowth in the gut, then garlic, a pod of garlic when you're cooking, would over a period of time help in acting as that antimicrobial, which would be a good thing to incorporate. Then there are other spices which you can use in your drinks as well, like cinnamon and cardamom. You know, cinnamon, it has antiviral properties and it has antioxidant activity. And in fact, you know, cinnamon can help in improving insulin sensitivity. And I just would suggest that take a stick of cinnamon and drop it in a jug of water and drink the cinnamon-infused water throughout the day. And it's flavorsome, it's got nice aroma, and also it's good for your gut. And clearly, it helps in improving our insulin sensitivity, in the sense we will be able to manage our glucose regulation better if we start to get into using cinnamon on a regular basis. It's just a matter of remembering that, you know, to use them regularly is what is important. Cardamom, again, it activates detoxification pathways. It helps the liver in detoxifying nutrients and toxins. And of course, I'm going to end this talk for this first show with mentioning turmeric. I don't need to talk too much about turmeric, as most of us know the benefits of turmeric as an anti-inflammatory. It's an antioxidant. My only suggestion would be, you know, it is best to start cooking your grains or legumes or your vegetables by adding a teaspoon of turmeric to the water in which you're cooking that, because by adding turmeric to the water and a little bit of pepper with it, and you cook your grains or legumes or vegetables, then you have greater chance of releasing the phytoconstituents from turmeric powder into your food along with pepper, which then activates the turmeric, and that can be very beneficial. So thank you so much. And in Are You Well, I am hoping to share with you the wisdom of Ayurveda as it applies to our modern day life, to focus on our health and to stay well. So until I get to meet you next, stay well and do stay tuned to Are You Well.